Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have mostly fair skies, 28 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing 44% humidity, west winds to 9 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 29, northwest winds to 10. For tonight, snow after 3 a.m., low around 21 overnight, light and variable winds turning to the southeast to 15 after midnight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson is being sued, this time by the former head of Anchorage's Equal Opportunity Office. And the U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs visited Alaska last week.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says she will ramp up efforts to prevent Russians from evading U.S. sanctions as the war in Ukraine extends into a second year. From Kyiv, NPR's Yulian Haida reports that Yellen stopped in the Ukrainian capital on her way home from a turbulent G20 meeting in India.
During a visit to a school that had been damaged by Russian forces, Yellen said sanctions remain an important tool to counter, quote, Russia's military-industrial complex.
Our coalition of over 30 countries has mounted the swiftest, most unified, and most ambitious sanctions regime in modern history.
But huge economies like China continue to trade manufactured goods with Russia. That's one of the reasons why China refused to sign on to a statement condemning Russia's war at a G20 meeting this weekend. At the school visit, Yellen refused to answer reporters' questions asking if the U.S. would sanction China if it began to supply Russia with weapons. Yulian Haida, NPR News, Kyiv.
The state of Florida is now in control of Walt Disney World. Today, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, who's widely expected to run for president in 2024, signed a bill that ended Disney's 50-year-long self-governing status. DeSantis and Disney publicly clashed over the theme park giant's opposition to a state law that restricts discussions of gender identity or sexual orientation in kindergarten through third grade. Outrage in Volusia County, Florida today over a recent series of anti-Semitic acts.
We are not going to tolerate this. Let me tell you, this is not about free speech. This is about violence.
Volusia County Sheriff Mike Chitwood speaking out after a meeting with faith-based and community leaders today. A hate group reportedly used a portable projector to display anti-Semitic messages on the side of the Daytona International Speedway, held up anti-Semitic signs on a local pedestrian overpass, and handed out anti-Semitic propaganda in Ormond Beach. Last month, Florida lawmakers introduced a bill to make certain anti-Semitic acts hate crimes and classify certain offenses as felonies. Fallout continues after the creator of the Dilbert comic strip, Scott Adams, made a series of racist remarks last week. NPR's Anastasia Siulkas reports the comics distributor, Andrews McMeel Universal, is severing ties.
During a live stream on YouTube, Adams called black people a, quote, hate group and encouraged white people to, quote, get the hell away from black people. Major newspapers, including the Washington Post and the Los Angeles Times, had already announced they would no longer carry Dilbert, which premiered in 1989. Before Andrews McMeel Universal canceled the strip's distribution, Dilbert appeared in 65 countries and 25 languages. Adams had long been criticized for other comments, including questioning the number of people who died in the Holocaust and claiming that a television version of Dilbert was canceled because he's white.
This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The former head of Anchorage's Equal Opportunity Office, who was fired after investigating allegations that the city's deputy library director made racist comments, is suing Mayor Dave Bronson and his administration in federal court. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has this report.
Heather McAlpine served as the director of Anchorage's Office of Equal Opportunity from 2015 to 2022. She was abruptly terminated as she was looking into complaints made by employees against Deputy Library Director Judy Elledge. McAlpine sued the Bronson administration in state court in 2022 over the same allegations. For the federal complaint to go through, she had to file a charge of discrimination with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC granted her a right to sue letter in late November. According to McAlpine's lawsuit filed in federal court Wednesday, she was terminated last May as she was set to go over the complaints with the city's Human Resources Department, then headed by Nikki Chewbacca. Chewbacca had come under fire for wearing a T-shirt that stated, quote, "I'm with Judy," during a library advisory meeting, and he was eventually walled off by the city ombudsman from investigating complaints made by library employees. Chewbacca resigned February 6th, just before he was due to speak to Anchorage Assembly members about his investigation into the hiring and resignation of former health director Joe Gerace, who left his position shortly before a report revealed his fraudulent resume. According to McAlpine's lawsuit, library employees told her that Elledge, named J.E. in the federal lawsuit, made disparaging remarks against Alaska Native people, called a book about drag queens, quote, filth, and threatened an employee with, quote, wringing their neck if they repeated her comments. She's also alleged to have told employees, quote, "I'm untouchable. No one can fire me in my position." Elledge created a hostile work environment and caused numerous library employees to quit, including among senior-level staff, the lawsuit says. The federal lawsuit accuses Mayor Bronson of violating Title VII of the Federal Civil Rights Act, which prohibits the retaliatory firing of an employee for opposing discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. McAlpine is requesting that she be reinstated in her position and that she receive back pay, legal, and punitive damages as a result of her termination. Bronson administration officials declined to comment on the lawsuit. McAlpine's lawyer declined to comment as well. Elledge is still the deputy library director, and a new director was confirmed in December. Meanwhile, Bronson remains embroiled in a dispute with the Anchorage Assembly over documents related to Gerace, the former health director, as the mayor has refused to turn them over. Investigations continue in that matter, as well as allegations by Anchorage's former municipal manager, who also accuses Bronson of illegally firing her, among other alleged illegal and unethical behavior. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
The U.S. Army is proposing to replace Fort Wainwright's coal-fired heat and power plant with natural gas-fired boilers installed around the post. The Army must replace the 65-year-old power plant because it's unreliable and becoming prohibitively expensive to operate. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Army officials announced their proposed choice in a final environmental impact statement made public on February 10th. They considered building a $687 million replacement coal plant and a $363 million facility that would run on either diesel or natural gas. But they opted instead for the $117 million distributed natural gas-fired boilers alternative.
The U.S. Army Garrison Alaska has identified that third alternative as the preferred alternative.
Fort Wainwright Directorate of Public Works Operations and Maintenance Division Chief Jennifer Meyer says the Army can't yet say much about the natural gas system or the time frame in which it'll be built, but she says it'll likely take a while.
Pretty much any Army construction project takes us several years to start to finish.
The post's old heat and power plant has been in service 30 years beyond its average design life, and it's become one of the Army's most expensive to operate. Post officials say it's broken down four times in recent years, and on one cold winter day in 2018, it was offline for several hours.
The Army mission here is at some risk with a single source of heat that is that old.
Former Fort Wainwright Utilities Privatization and Maintenance Division Chief Stephen Stringham said in 2019 that the breakdowns and fires at the plant convinced Post officials that the facility and much of its steam heat distribution lines needed to be replaced. Their decision to convert to natural gas-fired heat will require a large volume of LNG to fuel it, and the Fairbanks-based Interior Gas Utility is interested in filling that demand.
We are very excited to work with the Army in any capacity that might be needed.
IGU spokesperson Elena Suddeth says the utility should be well positioned to supply the post due to a recently reached deal with Hillcorp Alaska and subsidiary Harvest to build a North Slope gas processing plant and truck the LNG that it produces there to Fairbanks.
The initial facility is going to be 150,000 gallons a day, and IGU needs about half of that to begin with. So just the initial facility alone is going to have plenty of natural gas for Fort Wainwright.
The natural gas boilers would generate heat, but not electricity under the current proposal. So Fort Wainwright would have to buy more power from Golden Valley Electric Association to replace the 20 megawatts that the coal plant can produce. GVEA spokesperson Meadow Bailey says that would be in addition to the power the utility already provides to the post.
Fort Wainwright is one of our larger customers.
Bailey says if the Army seeks a new power sales agreement, Golden Valley officials would work to ensure it benefits all utility customers.
We are, of course, a member-owned utility, and so we exist to meet the needs of all of our members, residents and business, and this, of course, includes military installations.
Meyer says Army officials will begin working on details like power purchases and LNG supply contracts after their decision to build the new facility is made final on March 13th. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The controversial Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly's Climate Action and Adaptation Committee discussed removing clauses in the action chapter of their draft plan last week. A four-hour meeting started with an hour of public testimony. KUAC's Robin reports.
The committee had been meeting for 2 years and was due to sunset in January after presenting a final draft to the Borough Assembly. But the plan became controversial last fall after the Assembly's presiding officer removed six committee members and replaced them with new folks, most of whom were unfamiliar with the plan or the process. At the time, Aaron Legiski said some of the mitigation strategies in the plan were too radical and would not likely get passed by the Assembly when it came before the full body. That action still resonated in public comments given to the committee last week. Tristan Glover presented a petition with 255 signatures from concerned community members.
They signed this petition because they were concerned that the sudden removal of the previous committee members represented a concerted effort to undermine and dismantle this community-based plan. What you all have presented as a suite of edits to this plan not only proves that these community members were right to feel concerned for this plan, if passed in their entirety, they would represent a complete failure on the part of this body to do the task that you were assigned, to pass a borough-level plan to mitigate and adapt to the climate crisis.
Several commenters referred to the proposed deletions and changes to the eight goals and recommendations in the plan's action chapter, the piece the committee was assigned last week. New members had done a lot of homework suggesting edits. UAF Emeritus Professor of Ecology Terry Chapin was on the original committee and reseated by Legiski in January. He tallied up the times members wrote keep, delete, or change for each strategy in the action chapter.
Look in general at the degree of agreement that there is among committee members, and that I think we'll make more progress if we focus on the points of agreement rather than the points of disagreement.
According to his count, the committee members agreed on retaining 46 strategies, about three-quarters of them. For several strategies, member Barbara Haney suggested new language removing references to climate change, but other members, like Vivian Stiver and Fred Freeman, thought they should be left in the document language.
And to improve conditions for rural area businesses.
Question.
Yes,
did you leave out climate change?
Yeah, she did. Discussion.
Yes, Mr. Reamer.
Removing climate change from all these is not going to be productive. Obviously, we're not doing this unless it's for climate change.
The committee disagreed on the strategy to hire a grant writer to request federal money. While the borough already has a grant writer on staff, some members, like Freeman, thought it should not be a line in the plan.
We need to find ways to do these things ourselves. I'm against putting this in a plan like this. I really think we need to not be depending on the federal government to bail us out into everything else.
The committee worked through each suggested strategy for the first goal of the eight before adjourning. They will pick up the action chapter again this Thursday, March 2nd at 2 p.m. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs Dennis McDonough visited Alaska last week with stops in Bethel, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. McDonough spoke at a ribbon cutting for the new VA community-based outreach clinic in Fairbanks on Friday, saying it, like others around the state, is about fulfilling a simple principle.
Improving outcomes for veterans, their families, their caregivers, and their survivors.
The in-town clinic replaces one at Fort Wainwright with a larger, more accessible facility offering a range of services.
Primary care, mental health care, substance use disorder treatment, chiropractic services.
During a press conference after the ribbon cutting, McDonough talked about what he learned in Alaska.
It's a big state with a lot of vets, and it's difficult to move around the state. So we have to intensify our efforts, which happens to be something that we're pursuing across the VA enterprise, of moving care closer to veterans.
He said a major challenge to that is hiring and retaining health workers, and underscored the importance of the VA partnering with local and tribal care providers. Secretary McDonough was accompanied by Alaska's congressional delegation. Senator Dan Sullivan, who serves on the Veterans Affairs Committee, said VA services in Alaska had been on the upswing in recent years.
We went about 3 years ago to the most improved VA system in the entire country, voted. So things are going in a good direction, and we want to keep that momentum going. And there's been some indications that we're backsliding.
Sullivan pointed to the outsourcing of appointment booking services to the lower 48 and said that addressing that and difficulties with staffing are especially important right now, as the federal PACT Act is expected to significantly increase claims by Alaska veterans exposed to toxic chemicals during their service. Are they rocket scientists or third graders? The students in Mrs. Colleen Smith's class at Hufftelling Elementary were both on Friday morning as they designed, built, and launched their own paper rockets with staffers from the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. Nicole Donovan and Lizzie Coriel have been in Ketchikan all week as part of the museum's outreach program. They spent an hour guiding a group of students through the process of making paper rockets. KRBD's Reagan Miller stopped by to watch and sent us this audio postcard.
All right, my friends, the really important thing with these rockets today, we do not want to cut these dotted lines.
So you will be cutting one rectangle.
Do we need to cut these little pieces out? Thumbs up or thumbs down? Thumbs down. We are not cutting these little notches out. You might have three, you might have four, you are not cutting them out. So the next thing I'm going to give your tables are these PVC pipes. These are how we are going to build the bodies of our rocket. You are going to take your little Pac-Man and you are going to twist it, and you want to make a pointy cone. Okay, so kind of like this. And then you are going to get tape on the side. So you're going to kind of do a twist, and then one piece goes over the other piece, and then you twist it, and then your circle will become this cone shape.
Markers, scissors, and tape cluttered the tables where the students were putting the finishing touches on their rocket's frame. It can be difficult to keep young scientists on task, but everyone finished their rockets in about an hour.
Lift a 6-pound bear.
A 6-pound bear?
And I could just throw it up in the air.
Where'd you find a 6-pound bear?
Mom gave it to me.
Like a real bear?
No.
I don't know. I'm not from Alaska. Do people just give bears?
It was finally launch time. 3, 2, 1. Most of the rockets made successful liftoffs, but one or two needed some extra help making it off the launch pad. Shock rippled through the group as one of the scientists explained what went wrong.
All right, everyone, I need to count on 3, 2, 1.
It might mean
right.
There's some air leaking through some taping. So why don't you do some testing and then we can try again.
Just as with bigger rockets, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Coriel from the museum says that's the whole reason she's there.
I think especially from a young age of building students' confidence in science and showing them that they can be successful, I think is really important.
Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
It's not just consumers who spent more last month. I'm Novosavo with a Marketplace Minute. Business spending appears to have rebounded in January. The Commerce Department says core capital goods orders, which exclude aircraft and military equipment, rose 0.8% following a slight decline in December. We learned Friday that consumer spending rose nearly 2% in January. The Supreme Court has agreed in its next term to hear a case challenging how the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is funded. The watchdog agency gets its funding from the Federal Reserve instead of congressional appropriations. The National Association of Realtors says pending home sales rose a much better than expected 8% in January amid a dip in mortgage rates. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 27th day of February, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:09. It will set again at 6:36. That will give us 10 hours and 27 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 58 seconds, nearly 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 47 degrees, set in 2022, just last year, and our record low was minus 6, set in 1986. Currently 28 degrees under fair skies here in Kodiak. They have 44% humidity, westerly winds at 9 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility at the airport. Look for mostly sunny skies this afternoon with a high near 29, northwest winds to 10. Snow mainly after 4 a.m., low around 21 overnight. Light and variable winds becoming southeast tonight to 15 after midnight, could gust to 25. And they're looking at new snow accumulation of less than 1 inch overnight. That snow is expected to continue until 10 a.m. tomorrow, followed by rain. High near 39 tomorrow, with southeast winds to 20, becoming southwest to 10 in the afternoon, but could gust as high as 25. And look for that rain to start on Tuesday night. Looking at local tides, we have a low tide coming up this afternoon at 1:53 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 1.6-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 8:34 this evening of 4.9 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 2:12 this afternoon. That will be a 2.6-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 8:22 p.m. and be 8.4 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. For today, northwest 20, except south of Dangerous Cape, northwest 20 in the morning, becoming variable less than 10. Seas to 10 feet on our east side with freezing spray today. For tonight, east 15, becoming southeast 25 after midnight. North of Dangerous Cape, look for north 10, becoming southeast 20 this evening. Seas to 7 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, on our east side, southeast 30, becoming southwest in the afternoon, seas to 10 feet. They are calling for Wednesday to Thursday, west winds for 45 knots and seas to 23 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, we have a heavy freezing spray warning today and also a small craft advisory. North winds to 25 knots are expected to turn to the northeast and come down to 15 this afternoon, 5-foot seas subsiding to 3 feet this afternoon with heavy freezing spray today in the Shelikof. For tonight, east 20, seas to 4 feet with freezing spray. And for tomorrow, east 20 in the morning, becoming variable 10, 5-foot seas subsiding to 3 feet tomorrow afternoon on our west side with freezing spray expected in the morning. Wednesday through Thursday on the west side, west 35, seas to 10 feet. The Coast Guard Marine Safety Office has moved their downtown office. The new location is at 5211 West Rezanoff Drive, which is across from Anton Larson Road. Their number's the same, which is 907-486-5918. The Kodiak Island Borough is having a special assembly meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the assembly chambers. Citizens' comments will be followed by consideration of appointments or the process for appointing a borough manager. The Historic Preservation Committee will be holding a meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 12 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public, and agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you need paper copies or additional information, call the Kodiak Historical Society at 907-486-5920. The local Alaska Department of Fish and Game Advisory Committee is meeting tomorrow as well. They're having their public meeting at 5:30 p.m. at the Fish and Game Building on Near Island. The advisory committee will be discussing proposals to the Board of Game, especially with those for Kodiak. The meeting is open to the public and is an opportunity to voice your concerns and suggestions. For more information and to contact the Board of Game directly, go to their website, which is at boardofgame.adfg.alaska.gov. Other meetings coming up include tomorrow's Fire Protection Area Number 1 regular meeting and budget public hearing. That's happening at the Bayside Fire Station at 6 p.m. tomorrow. On March 2nd, the Health Facilities Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting. That's happening at the Assembly Chambers on 3 p.m. on Thursday. And the Assembly regular meeting that was to have been held on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. has been canceled. The Kodiak Island Trails Network is collecting submissions for their 13th annual Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival, which will be held Friday, April 7th. The deadline to submit your entries is March 31st, so get out there and start filming your adventures. Looks like it's a good day to do it. Visit www.islandtrails.org/film for guidelines. Kodiak Refuge Salmon Camp Registration Lottery is open. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge will be having summer science camps for students going into kindergarten through 8th grade. Find registration packets on the Kodiak Refuge website or stop by the Refuge Visitor Center downtown. Packets are available right at the front door or inside during open hours, which is Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. Lots of things going on at the Kodiak Public Library include tonight's big Zoom trivia game. That happens at 6:30 p.m. Just find the link on the library's webpage, and you can join in along with everybody else. Kodiak Public Library's Love of Reading Month ends February 28th. That's tomorrow. Sign in to kodiakbeanstack.org and log at least 10 hours of reading before March 1st to qualify for the Love of Reading Winner's Circle. And also tomorrow at 6 p.m., the library will be showing the film The Fablemans for dinner and a movie. You bring the dinner, they show the movie. The library is loosely based on the childhood of Steven Spielberg. The film is rated PG-13 and approximately 2 hours long. That's again Tuesday, tomorrow, 6 p.m. at the library. Movie day. Wednesday at 3:30 p.m., the library will be offering their famous Lego Club. Children under 10 should be accompanied by an adult. Thursday, March 2nd at 3 p.m. is the library's next chess club meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open to all ages. And attention, fandom artists, do you have art you would like to share for FanCon? Join the library's Fan Art Forum on March 17th at 10 a.m. Bring your portfolio and unique art for display in the Fan Art Gallery. For more information, contact Alana or Bailey at 907-486-8686, which is the library's phone number. Library hours are Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Tuesdays and Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.